It is 5 o'clock. The program you just heard, Labrish with Hafter Selassie, will be back next week at 2, following the work of the Midnight Ravers. And stay tuned for Back of the Book, right here, right now. Da, 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 da.
Hello, this is Radio's Uncle Sidney. When I'm out and about, folks comes up to me and says, "You should be ashamed." But when they calms down, they says how much they loves WBAI. That's WBAI New York and WBAI.org. Back in the day, we had commentaries by Malcolm X, Ayn Rand, Abby Hoffman, and William F. Buckley Jr. Imagine them folks in the same room at the same time. Nowadays, we've got Bob Fass, the founder of the Feast. Amy Goodman, you know her, we got her. Michio Kaku, the smartest guy in the world. Shows that helps you not to get evicted. Top-of-the-line news and interviews. Insane artists and musicians. All okay, okay. We went nuts for a while back there. But now we're okay. We're like your crackhead cousin that's making good. So we know you're pulling for us. Go, go, run right now to WBAI.org and look around. See where we've gone. You can even subscribe online. Believe me, you'll be glad you did. Stay tuned.
It should be about 5 a.m., and you're listening to All. Is there a second civil war in our near future? Radio WBAI New York.
No, I know we're not in Kansas.
Good goddamn morning. How the hell are you? This is WBAI New York. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. Good morning, my dear.
Good morning to you, my dear, and a hearty hello to our dear 19 listeners, wherever they may be.
We're going to talk about various things on this program, and you can find out a little bit more about some of this stuff by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. When you get there, you'll get a blue navigation frame on the left-hand side of your screen. At the top of that, it will say latest Back of the Book program links. Click on that. It's a link, and it will bring you to the web page for this program. The WBAI website and the archives seem to be working all right as we record this program. This is our 90th pandemic episode of Back of the Book. It's pre-recorded. This program was recorded on Friday for airing on Saturday morning. If things have happened between then and when you're hearing this program, we won't be referencing them on this program. A recorded program cannot be as up-to-date as a live program, but this is what we have to do in these dangerous times. The top story of this week is: we have surpassed all previous totals, and as of the recording of this program, we have 120 followers on Twitter. And the world is aghast. The next thrill-packed episode of the WBAI local station board that you can pay rapt attention to will be held on this coming Wednesday, May 11th at 7 p.m. on Zoom, even though Zoom compromises privacy and security. And so we'll be going to do that. According to the Johns Hopkins website, COVID-19 cases in the whole world reached 516,499,937 on Friday, and global deaths reached 6,248,986. In America, the number of cases as of Friday was 81,772,890. And the death toll in America was 997,355. So 3,801 people have died of COVID-19 in America since our last program 1 week ago. This week's death rate is significantly higher than last week's. And we get another one of those, and we'll hit the 1 million mark, which some people think we've hit already. The BA2 subvariant of the Omicron variant is still the dominant variant of COVID-19, with the BA2.12.1 sub-sub-variant showing up around the world. Preliminary research suggests that the newest sub-sub-variant is about 25% more transmissible than the BA2 sub-variant, which starts getting to be where, geez, there is no getting away from this. We're all going to catch it. It's just a case of, are you going to end up really sick and maybe die or get long COVID? Or are you going to just have a little temporary, this feels lousy, and then you'll be okay? I think if you have the vaccination, you'll probably be in the latter category. If not, well, good luck. The pandemic is not over. By the time this program airs on Saturday morning, all of those figures we quoted will be higher, of course. This was all mostly preventable. It did not have to happen. Also, the World Health Organization has come out saying that the real death toll from COVID-19 in the world is about 15 million. Johns Hopkins is giving an official total of about 6.2 million, and the World Health Organization says it's really more than double that. I tend to agree with them because there are countries that are saying, oh, we don't have diseases here and aren't reporting any. And of course, it's there. It's all around the world. It's a pandemic. We know that in America, there are people who, admittedly for political reasons, have had coroners not say people have died of COVID-19. Some, for other reasons, don't want it recorded that somebody died of COVID-19. So it's being hidden for a lot of different reasons. And in some places, they're just so lucky if they can, you know, get from one day to the next. They're not keeping real track of records and things. They're just trying to survive, period. I mean, the doctors are trying to survive. So they're not sending all of their good information to the World Health Organization. So this is all bad stuff here. It's far worse than people have suggested. And I'll point out that the death toll from the 1918-1919 flu pandemic is always touted as this gigantic killer. And it killed maybe 50 million people in the world. Right now, going by the World Health Organization numbers, COVID-19 has killed 15 million. Much lower figure, but we're in a time when our medical science is more than a century better than it was a century ago. The advances have been tremendous. Plus, we've also got a way to stop it. But for various reasons, it's still having a very huge death toll. And there are reports of COVID-19 infections following the White House Correspondents' Dinner in Washington, D.C. last weekend. Show host Trevor Noah joked that, quote, "It is my great honor to be speaking tonight at the nation's most distinguished super spreader event," unquote. The reality turns out to not to have been a real joke. Various news people and politicians, including some who interacted directly with 79-year-old President Biden, have come down with COVID-19. Dr. Anthony Fauci, who was invited, did not attend because he's 80 years old and he understands the risks. And of course, the Russian invasion of Ukraine continues. It looks like Mariupol is going to fall to the Russian invaders pretty soon. The Russians continue to target apartment buildings in an apparent effort to show that they are the world's premier terrorists. A rumor is spreading that the United States is feeding information to the Ukrainian military that has helped them to kill about a dozen Russian generals. Certainly, the United States is giving Ukrainian forces intelligence information that is helping them to fight the invaders. If the American intel is directly helping them to kill the Russian generals, I have to say that I would look at that as payback. So we were hearing that Putin was maybe paying to have American soldiers in Afghanistan killed. Maybe now America is handing out information that's helping to get Russian generals killed. Yeah, American grunts for Russian generals. Okay. This may not end here, of course. The Russians are stealing everything they can get, including what's in museums. There was one particular museum where there were some ancient Scythian gold artifacts. And this is from like 4,000 years ago or something. And the Russians came in with a man in a white coat and some armed soldiers, and they just grabbed it all and left. Bandits. Some people are saying that we shouldn't be helping the Ukrainians at all, even to the point of ignoring the invasion and the atrocities and war crimes being committed by the Russians, because there are far right-wing groups involved in the fighting on the side of Ukraine. I have to disagree. On the one hand, who can't speak out against what the Russians are doing to the people of Ukraine? On the other, you have the fact that a large power is just invading a neighboring country on the basis that it owns that country anyway, and it's not a country in the first place. You can't let Putin get away with that. When the Nazis of the Third Reich, along with their allies, the commies of the Soviet Union, invaded Poland in 1939, other countries in the world finally began to fight the Axis powers and their allies. Even though Poland was no great place either, with its own long-standing dictatorship, and with Poland having participated with the Third Reich in grabbing a piece of Czechoslovakia in 1938, Britain and France still went to war for Poland. If Putin isn't stopped, he'll go after more territory. Will he even stop at Alaska? The big leak from the Supreme Court happened this past Monday, and a first draft opinion by Justice Samuel Alito, dated February 2022, in that Alito argues that abortion is not a right because, quote, such a right has no basis in the Constitution's text or in our nation's history, unquote, and that, quote, Roe was egregiously wrong from the start, unquote. And the memo concludes that, quote, we hold that Roe and Casey must be overruled, unquote. The draft opinion lists Clarence Thomas, Neil Gorsuch, Brett Kavanaugh, and Amy Coney Barrett as joining Alito in this decision. Well, we knew this was coming, but knowing it's coming doesn't make the blow any less. Plus, it's not actually happened. We're just getting a little extra. Here it comes, kids. You're going to get it between the eyes. So, yeah, this is... oh, well. Gorsuch, Kavanaugh, and Barrett lied to the Senate during their hearings. We knew they were lying. Trump had already said he was going to appoint judges to the court who would overturn Roe v. Wade. Senator Susan Collins of Maine was saying that she believed them. I was wondering if she was really that stupid. And now she's saying that she won't agree to vote for the bill to make abortion legal in America on a nationwide scale that the Democrats are bringing up. All right, that settles it. She's just disingenuous. Alaska Senator Lisa Murkowski was also saying that she'd believed the three Trump appointees when they indicated that they weren't there to overturn Roe. Well, we'll see what she does next. Maybe she really was that stupid.
You know, Roe versus Wade has been under attack since the very moment it was passed by the Supreme Court. The very moment. They decided, oh, we don't want to have women, poor women who are on Medicaid. We don't have Medicaid paying for their abortions. Or we don't want to have this one have access. We don't have that one have access. This has been under attack for two generations. And it is so galling to know that women today are going to have a problem into the foreseeable future, making a decision about their life, which is a health care decision. This is health care. It's health care as much as a man deciding to have a vasectomy is health care. No one has to go through a morals test to get a vasectomy or a boob job, for that matter. It just is galling. I had an abortion back in the 20th century, and it was a safe and legal abortion. And at this point, the United States has a health policy towards this procedure, which is pregnancy termination. That's the same as Iran's. So isn't that interesting? There are so many things that the right wing, mostly white, Christian conservatives are going after. They want to control the way people are in this society. They want to control who gets to be in American society. They want lots more white babies to be born. This was like back in 73. That was the big brouhaha about this. They don't want people to have sex before marriage. They don't want gay people to be around, period. They don't want trans people to be around. It's just as horrible as anything I can think of to take something that in its battered and tattered form was at least still there for some women, and now it's not going to be there for hardly any of them at all. This is a health care issue. And in Canada, it's there. It's part of your health care. If you need it, it's there. Just as much as if you need contraception, it's there. If you need any kind of gynecological examination and healthcare, it's there. And I just hope that we're able to fight our way out of this and back to a place where people matter, not just the people that these right-wing creeps think matter, not just the people that these right-wing creeps think of as people. And I guess that's all I have to say right now.
Thank you, Pickles of the North. This is apparently not the first leak of information from the Supreme Court, despite that being claimed by some people saying this has never happened before. No, apparently it has happened before. The Republicans have seized upon the leak as the thing to be outraged about. I've read that the original final ruling on Roe v. Wade in 1973 had been leaked to a news magazine right before it was published. I'm sure that there have been others in the past, some of which did not end up informing the general public. Remember, you've got a lot of high-power people with interests in these things, and the idea that nobody ever, you know, went up to an aide or whatever they're called, their clerks, and said, "See all this money? I'd like to know what their decision is going to be ahead of time." For various reasons. I mean, if you could get that, in some cases, you could invest money and make an enormous amount. And, you know, if you knew a month ahead of time or 2 months ahead of time that they were going to rule, you could get rid of stocks that are going to be badly affected. You could buy stocks that would be positively affected. You could do all sorts of things. I'm sure that we've had leaks before that were not publicized, but which happened. I'm sure that there have been others in the past. The idea that this leak damages the credibility of the Supreme Court is quite the fiction. The right-wing majority of the Supreme Court has totally destroyed the credibility of the court already. Some right-wing jerk named Grant Stinchfield has a cable show, and he said, quote, "I find it suspect that the first leak coming out of the Supreme Court in history comes shortly after Judge Jackson is confirmed. She would be my first suspect when it comes to the leak because Ketanji Brown Jackson is a radical left-wing activist," unquote. What a jerk. She's not on the Supreme Court yet. This moron is so uninformed, but oh, he's got an opinion. He knows who did it. She did it, even though she isn't seeing any of this stuff. She's not on the court. She has no more access to this than the rest of us have. So this is the kind of thinking the right wing engages in, which is why you have all this QAnon stuff that's obviously nuts, and why you have all sorts of right-wing propaganda online that's full of what I refer to as conspiracy hoaxes. They're not theories, folks. Theories are something real. The stuff the right wing does with their conspiracy hoaxes, that crap ain't real. And so this just tells me once again that even the ones that they put on cable news and stuff like that, they're so stupid that they can't even think through, gee, how would she do that if she doesn't have access since she's not on the court? Does this bozo think that she is on the court already? Maybe he thinks there are 10 justices sitting there. Oh, boy. I think that all of this is a symptom of the entire United States of America falling apart, and that's bad. I think that this has the potential to start an actual shooting civil war in America. It's probably started already, maybe not so much the shooting, but some shooting. According to a January Gallup poll, 48% of Americans say abortion should be legal only under certain circumstances. 32% say it should be legal under any circumstances, and only 19% say it should be illegal in all circumstances. According to a January poll from CNN, 69% of Americans want to keep Roe v. Wade intact, while 30% want the ruling completely overturned. A Pew Research poll conducted in March found 61% of U.S. adults believe abortion should be legal in most cases, while 37% said abortion should be illegal in all or most cases. Republican presidents have appointed most of the Supreme Court by this time, while the popular vote has gone to the Democratic presidential candidate in most elections over the past couple of decades. The Supreme Court now caters to a small minority of the American population. This can't go on forever. The New York Times this past week ran a piece about gay and lesbian activists challenging the American Psychiatric Association's designation of homosexuality as a disease in 1972. I remember that. I was a gay activist back then. I was very glad to see that in this article, the Times did not perpetuate the lie that the National Gay Task Force had gotten the American Psychiatric Association to reverse that designation a year later. Because, in fact, it was the Gay Activists Alliance that raised money and sent somebody to Hawaii to lobby them and really go after them and all of this, and they did it. In fact, the National Gay Task Force didn't even come into existence until months later. So how could an organization that didn't exist yet accomplish anything at an event? So I was glad they didn't perpetuate the lie about NGTF doing it.
India and Pakistan have been going through a horrible, horrible heat wave over the past number of days. And what is unusual about this is that for India, it's been across the entire land there. And it's been incredibly hot. Temperatures well over 100 into the 120s. And it's expected to continue. And apparently what has happened is the short spring season did not exist this year. They shot straight into summer. You have summer and then you have the monsoon season. And this is just terrible because there aren't a lot of facilities to cope with that kind of heat, even if you have air conditioning. You know, the power grid isn't set up to take this kind of abuse from all the air conditioners that run. And many, many people don't have any air conditioning. So this is climate change. And it's pretty awful. And it also affects how you can grow crops, how much water you have to drink. So this is a very, very bad thing that's happening right now in India and Pakistan.
Yeah, water is a big, serious issue in some parts of India and Pakistan. They fight wars over it sometimes. And if it starts drying out because of this enormous heat, apparently the heat recently was about 100 degrees Fahrenheit. And it looks like it's going to go up to just above 120 degrees Fahrenheit. I've been in 120 degrees Fahrenheit in my life, and it was in the tropics, so there was plenty of water in the air and everything. And so there is that, and that can be very hard to live through. And most people don't get all that old in atmospheres like that because it taxes the system, and as you're older, you can't deal with the added burden of trying to cool yourself down, and people die of the heat. And the crops don't work terribly well if they're being baked just as they start to sprout from the seeds. So, yes, this is another aspect of climate change in the world. And it's probably not just weather. We can't say for certain, but it's probably not just bad weather. It's probably more permanent than that, which means climate change. So this is something you gotta take into account for in terms of the climate going. In the May 3rd Science Times from the New York Times, in an article by Carl Zimmer, they're talking about another aspect of climate change, quickening viral spillover. The article starts out, over the next 50 years, climate change will drive thousands of viruses to jump from one species of mammal to another, according to a study published in Nature. Nature is, of course, this science magazine where a lot of big deal science papers get posted. In the article, it says bats in Southeast Asia will be especially prone to these transmissions between species, the researchers found. As of now, many bat species in that region are limited to small ranges and don't come into contact with each other very much. But as the planet warms, these bats will fly quickly to suitable climates and encounter new species. Just as people are leaving Central America because they cannot raise crops there anymore because it's getting so hot and dry, and so they start coming north to America, so all sorts of animals are moving and going to new places because either it's too hot for them or it's too hot for whatever they eat. And whatever they eat is going into a cooler area, so they got to follow the food. The article continues. As viruses move to new host species, they evolve. and can potentially evolve in ways that make them more likely to infect people. The coronavirus that caused SARS in 2002 originated in Chinese horseshoe bats, then jumped to another species before infecting people. In addition, two studies released in February asserted that COVID arose through a similar sequence of events, with a coronavirus jumping from bats to wild mammals sold at markets in Wuhan before infecting humans. And the article concludes, when the researchers looked at the places mammals might end up in 2070, they found another reason to expect new human epidemics. Dr. Colin Carlson, a biologist at Georgetown University and a co-author of the new study about climate change making more viral spillover, said, quote, "It turns out that those are all the places we've built cities," unquote. So what's going to happen is the various animals are going to be migrating to places where there are cities. And I bet you the suburbs are going to start seeing some new animals they've never seen before. And, oh boy, what kind of viruses will they be carrying? And right about now, I think it's time for us to do a station break. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, broadcasting from a transmitter and antenna atop 4 Times Square, going through a new studio somewhere in downtown Brooklyn and originating in our living room somewhere else in Brooklyn. The program is Back of the Book. My name is R. Paul Martin. She is Radio's Pickles of the North. And you can find out more by going up to my website at glib.com, glib.com. You can also go to the official website of this radio station at wbai.org. Time is of the essence. And the basis for time is the second, at least on this planet. There's a group called the International Bureau of Weights and Measures, which regulates the 7 base units that govern time, length, mass, electrical current, temperature, the intensity of light, and the amount of a substance. And as technology has changed, these measures have had to be improved. In 2018, the International Bureau of Weights and Measures approved new definitions for the kilogram, mass, ampere, electrical current, Kelvin, temperature, and mole, the amount of a substance. You'll remember the mole from your chemistry classes, won't you? So now, with the exception of the mole, all of the standards are subservient to one other standard, time. The unit of which is the second. The meter, the official unit of length on this planet, is now defined as the distance light travels in a vacuum during one 299,792,458th of a second. Generally, that's rounded off to be about 300 million right there. And that's how you calculate things most of the time. A little bit off, but, you know, 299,792,458. It's a lot harder to type in than 3 times 10 to the ninth. The new definition of the kilogram, the official unit of mass, that rests on the second, too. Now, how scientists get that to happen is very interesting and highly mathematical. And I recall reading a certain book in the 80s that said that all units in that book would be expressed in centimeters. That was for convenience.
Really?
Yeah. And in the book, they proceeded to show how this was done, after which they expressed the mass of the sun in centimeters. Gives you an interesting idea of how things are related and about how things can be converted one way or another. It seems bizarre to us mostly, but yeah, that can happen. So they showed the mass of the sun in centimeters, and It was really too deep for me, but that's what can be done. A physicist who is the president of the International Bureau of Weights and Measures Consultative Committee for Time and Frequency, Noel C. DeMarc, said, quote, "All the units now are not autonomous units, but they are all depending on the second," unquote. And the scientists are now setting about changing the official definition of the second, which they hope to get formal approval for by the year 2030. Of course, time has been getting told by human beings for a long while. People long, long ago, before there was anything mechanical, would look at the sun and the moon and the stars and figure out it's about like that. And probably our ancient ancestors in Pinnacle Point were all standing around and saying, well, let's see, the sun is over there, so we have about enough time to walk down to the water, get some shellfish, and get back here before the lions start running around looking to eat us. Of course, at night, they had quite spectacular skies because they didn't have air pollution, and unless it were rainy or cloudy or something, they could really see the stars, and they could notice that the stars and the planets were moving over time. They probably didn't call it time, but they were telling time. They knew when dawn was going to be coming up in a fairly short amount of time. And then you had ancient Egypt, which made its contribution was they decided they liked the number 12. And so they said the day will be divided into 12 pieces, which we call hours, and those 12 pieces will be in the daytime. But then we have to have 12 pieces for the nighttime, too. That doesn't necessarily follow logically, but they did that. And so the day was 12 hours long, and the night was 12 hours long. Well, of course, the day and the night are only equal about twice a year, which means that things were a little bit off, and the hour for one part of the daytime would be different from another part. So there were problems with that. Then you had ancient Greeks who said, we need to really do something better than an hour, because if you say, we're going to meet on the top of this hill at 12 o'clock or something, and if the most precise unit of time you have is an hour, well, you might get there at 11 o'clock, and the other guy might get there at 1 o'clock, and it would be just a little bit off. So if you're doing something like, we're going to get our armies together and meet here at that time and then march south, well, you could have a little problem with things not quite being in sync. So the ancient Greeks said, we have to divide these hours a bit. And what they did was they knew the Babylonians, and the Babylonians were really in love with the number 60. The Babylonians based a lot on the number 60. And the Greeks said, 60, that sounds like it might be an idea for dividing an hour. And so they took 60 units of time inside an hour, and that's where we get the minute from. And so they had more precise time than others, and this stuff proceeded on and on. You know, you had ancient water clocks where you would have a bowl with a hole in the bottom of it. You would put it in water, and when the bowl sank, it was whatever amount of time you said it was. That's how things were. Things did not progress a great deal. And then in the Middle Ages, people started getting rather mechanical. And then we get those really old clocks. A lot of them were made out of wood. They still have some very old clocks that are hundreds of years old in Europe. And some of these clock towers, more than 1,000 years ago, people were experimenting with it. And monks in monasteries were experimenting with clocks. Because what the hell else did they have to do? You know, get up, pray, sweep the place, bugger each other. What do we do next? Let's make a clock. Really? Yeah, that way we can tell what time it is so we can all bugger each other. Oh, good idea. All right, Let's get the bugger clock going. And so they started experimenting with this. They had to wake up before dawn, so they couldn't just wait for the sunlight to hit them in the eyeballs. They had to get up earlier than that. And you can do things like rely on animals to make noise, like a rooster, but there are other animals too. But the thing they said was, we could do this and it will wake us up. So they invented basically an alarm clock. I think the first alarm was one of the brothers who stayed awake. In those ancient days, you didn't shut everything down and have everybody go to sleep, because you might wake up with your throat cut by a bunch of barbarians that are waiting outside who know your routine and say, okay, they're all asleep now. Let's go in and cut their throats and steal everything. And so they would have the clock, and one of the monks would be watching it. He would be on watch. And when it hit a certain time, when they knew it would be just before dawn, he'd wake everybody up, probably with a loud bell, just to annoy the hell out of everybody. Well, our concepts of precision have advanced a bit since then. Currently, the second is defined by atomic clocks. And, you know, you have your clock here and there, but it's not going to be good enough to deal with the technology of today because, for instance, you have satellites. They all have to deal with time. You have all sorts of things with your servers. Sometimes you'll look at a time on something and it will be off. And you'll say, why is it so off? Well, it's using coordinated universal time, which is pretty much the same as Greenwich Mean Time. And that is the official time for the planet Earth. I keep talking about the planet Earth here because this is the official stuff for the whole wide world. And in that way, all of the servers in the world try to keep in sync with each other. And there are all sorts of things that happen, like they measure the lag between them because the signal is only moving at the speed of light, and that makes a difference. It takes, I think it's 1/7 of a second at the speed of light for a signal to go completely around the world. This is something that has to be taken into account. So all of your computer stuff and your phones and all of that, it has to be kept track of in terms of time. And with these atomic clocks, what happens is the cesium-133 atom is bombarded by microwaves, and it resonates at a specific frequency of, well, basically 9.2 billion ticks per second. Yeah, it's a bigger number than that. I'm not going to read the whole goddamn number. Now, the cesium-133 clock was something that was done in 1957. This is not a super modern thing. In 1957, they came up with the atomic clock based on the cesium-133 atom. Well, technology has advanced, and they say we need to be more precise than that. What's happening is optical atomic clocks appear to be the new answer to timekeeping. Instead of using pokey old microwaves, these clocks use visible light, which is why they call them optical atomic clocks. And that's at a much higher frequency than microwaves. Actually, WBAI's signal isn't that far from a microwave. It's a radio signal, though, way lower than visible light. The frequency of visible light is orders of magnitude higher than radio waves or microwaves. Now, there are various kinds of these optical clocks, and they're trying to figure out what to use and what parameters they're going to be, which ones tend to be more stable. There are a lot of things to think about with this. And there are three optical clocks in Boulder, Colorado, where the American National Institute of Standards and Technology, called NIST, spelled N-I-S-T, that's the acronym for National Institute of Standards and Technology, where NIST is located. That's where I go to get my computer clock set. And you may be doing that too. Some of you are going to Microsoft. Boy, I try to avoid that. And what I do is I go to time.gov, which is out of Boulder, Colorado. And that also does the fast analysis of seeing what kind of lag there is between me and the signal generating stuff in Boulder, Colorado. So it times things out and figures out, send him this now. And it sends you a signal that is extremely slightly ahead of the actual time at Boulder, but it adds in the lag so that your clock and the clock in Boulder are the same. So by sending you a signal that's different from the time there, it makes it so that your time is the same as that time. Very simple stuff. So that's where I go to get my computer clock set all the time, which I have to do because I make sure that when I'm doing like meeting minutes and things, I have the time on it. And oh, you don't want to get into fights with people. You know, it's stuff in Pacifica and somebody will say, no, that wasn't that minute. It was another minute. Sometimes people try to say things were 10 minutes earlier or later than they were or something like that, which is grossly impossible. So if you tell them, hey, before the meeting, I set my clock by an atomic clock, and it's right. It's within a gazillionth of a millisecond or some goddamn thing. It usually shuts them up, unless they're so stupid they can't grasp any of it. Anyway, talking about Pacifica, getting these optical clocks, and I don't know which kind, which type, what technology, getting these optical clocks set up to redefine the second, it's not going to be easy. There's a lot to choose from. The clocks are so sensitive that they can be affected by a huge number of things. In 2015, physicists at NIST found that the seconds were measuring slightly differently across the clocks, which were in different labs. And they said, what is this? They had investigators come in and they did a lot of scientific research. What could it be? Well, they had to appeal to general relativity to find out what was going on. General relativity, this isn't the first time of that. An example of general relativity in everyday life, general relativity is Einstein's theory that took special relativity, which dealt with electromagnetism and stuff like that, and then married it to a theory about gravity. And it's called general relativity. And Albert Einstein finished all this in December 1915. With GPS, which a lot of people have to rely on, they had two different things that related to general relativity. One of which is that if something is moving fast, time slows down for it. The classic thing is if you're standing next to train tracks and a train goes by, the clock on the train is ticking more slowly than your clock standing still. The other thing is that gravity affects time. And so as you have lower gravity, time speeds up. So out in outer space, way out in outer space, time's moving faster than it is here, even if you're not moving much at all. However, for GPS satellites, they're both way up high, and they're moving fast. So they have two competing things. One thing is slowing down the ticks of its clock. The other thing is speeding up the ticks of its clock. So they had to really do research and a bunch of mathematics and figure out how the hell are we going to find where anything is using this with all of this differential time going on. But they figured it out. Anyway, for Boulder, Colorado, with those clocks that were not able to have the same time, to have the same second, it turned out that the clocks were not exactly at the same level. So that meant their distance from the center of the Earth was different. Now, understand, this is like in a place that's flat, and these laboratories are built on a flat basis, but you don't measure them to the bottom of the floor of the laboratory, you measure how distant they are from the center of the Earth. And it turns out that a clock that was half an inch higher than another ran at a faster rate. So these optical clocks are very precise, but they are subject to the laws of physics. And so this is a question. Can they get the new definition of the second done merely 8 years from now, by the year 2030? So this is a big thing that's going on right now. It will in some ways affect all of us. And yeah, there's a bit of technology that most of us don't pay any attention to, but which really does stuff with us every single day. Oh, wait a minute. Is this program too long? Are we going over? Well, we need to ask you to help us to survive here. WBAI is listener-sponsored non-commercial radio, and we need you to help us. We need you to become a BAI buddy. That's a sustaining member of WBAI. You do that by calling 1-212-209-2950 and telling the person who picks up at the other end at the call center that you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book. And if you become a BAI buddy and you make a monthly contribution and you pick how much money you want to spend, it can be $5, $10, more than that, whatever. And you also say what day of the month you would like your credit card or debit card charged, and you can become a BAI buddy and help us all to survive. We've got to be careful right now because we are renewing our license. Yes, the Pacifica Foundation has applied to the Federal Communications Commission to renew WBAI's license. This is a regular thing. All broadcast entities have to file to renew their licenses, and we're doing it. Unfortunately, there are some people in Pacifica who are actually writing to the Federal Communications Commission telling them to deny the renewal of WBAI's license. Their idea is BAI isn't pulling its weight in terms of money, and so WBAI should be cut off and all the other radio stations will be in much better shape. This is completely nuts. And so this is something else we have to fight against here. These are the same people, some of the same people who had those referendums about bylaws changes, which would put them in charge of everything. Yeah, those people. They're doing it again. And the two people who are challenging the license renewal are from KPFA, and one of them is a director of the Pacifica Foundation. Gee, what are the ethics of that? Anyway, 1-212-209-2950. If you could please call that number and say you want to become a BAI buddy in the name of Back of the Book, it would really, really be good. That means that's it for Back of the Book for this week. We'll be back here next week. Coming up next is
Arts Express with Prairie Miller.
And it's May, it's the middle third, and right now it's pouring rain outside as we record this. And so the weather's going to get better, we'll get nicer days. Some of us will look out the window and enjoy the sight. Some of you will actually brave the great outdoors and enjoy walking around in the merry month of May. Enjoy May as much as you can, despite some of the stuff that's happening. And above all, remember what that knowing which side of the upcoming civil war he's going to be on, Dormouse said.
Winding your way down a Baker Street, lighting your head and dead on your feet, well, another crazy day, drink the night away.
tell them you've seen and you talk about anything. He's got this dream.
I'm Max Schmid, staff representative to WBAI's local station board, inviting you to the next LSB meeting, Wednesday, May 11th at 7 p.m. The meeting, accessible to the public, includes an opportunity for public comment. The fastest and easiest way to join the meeting is by using the link on the Pacifica calendar at kpftx.org and on the WBAI website. You can also access the meeting by calling 929-205-6099. That's 929-205-6099. And enter this meeting ID, 922-457-2995. Once again, the meeting ID, 922-457-2995. And the password is 995, like WBAI's frequency, 99.5. So it's 995.995.99. In these unusual and difficult times, the Pacifica Network is struggling financially, so the LSB is working to have WBAI distinguish itself by doing everything necessary to be financially strong. That means increasing listenership, membership, and particularly listener contributions. Do you have to contribute to WBAI to access the meeting? No, but we hope you do. Please go to WBAI.org or call the pledge line, 212-209-2950, and donate to help strengthen WBAI. Thank you.
Your proud defender of the working class majority, Rick Smith.
Let's go to the phone lines. I got Margaret on line one. Margaret, how are we doing? How are we doing?
Rick, so happy to hear you on a weekend. I hear you every weekday.
Outstanding.
On Progressive. And now I can get you at night and in the morning. Oh, my God, I am so pleased. I can't wait to tell all the union children of union guys, people who are in unions, my trucking nephews in Philadelphia. Oh, my God, I'm so happy you're here. I wish you all the wonderfulness in the world. WBAI is a tremendously great station. I'm so happy that you're here. I'm sorry for the enthusiasm, but you caught me by surprise in the car. It was like, oh, my God.
I can take this all day long.
The Rick Smith Show.
On WBAI Saturdays, 6 to 8 p.m.
Radio of, for, and by We the Working People.
Dr. Stagg, are you aware of the consequences of postponing even for as little as 24 hours?
I think I am, sir.
On the eve of the D-Day invasion, a Scottish meteorologist locks horns with his American counterpart as they both try to convince General Eisenhower they can accurately predict the weather leading up to the assault.
Essentially, I would be canceling D-Day. Any holdup could be lethal. Cannot delay unless we absolutely have to.
The interaction between war and weather, the conflict between optimism and pragmatism, and the debate over the denial of climate change and the inescapable truth of it all.
You're going to explain to me what that chart means and why I should trust you and not one of the unsung American heroes of this war.
David Hague's Pressure, Saturday, WBAI Playhouse, May 7th, 8 p.m.
He's cool. He's exciting.
This dude is bad.
He's sexy. Okay, maybe not. He's a bad mother.
Shut your mouth.
He's Tony Ryan. On WBAI New York 99.5 FM. He's got both.
Break him with the sound of the trumpet.
Can you dig it?
Yeah, I can dig it, yeah.
He's got classic soul. Okay, I can't think of anything else.
I'm Tony Ryan. Tune in Saturday nights, 10 p.m. to 1 a.m.
Soul Central Station with Tony Ryan.
99.5 WBAI.
Breathe deep.
Breathe deep.
Expand your mind.
And let the music be your driving force.
Enter a world of color.
And keep on thinking free.
The most eclectic mix of music in the city that never sleeps at 99.5 FM.